And good evening. Last week I went to buy some dog food, and I went into town. There's sort of a high-end place, sort of a day spa for dogs, where I went to buy dog food. And I was standing in line with this 40 pounds of dog food, and I heard this, you know, yapping in the back where the groomers are. And I looked through the window, and there he was, this magnificent-looking golden retriever. I'm not particularly fond of golden. I love all dogs, but I'm not particularly fond of golden retrievers. They're wonderful heart dogs, not great intellects. Maybe you saw the cartoon of the shot of a happy golden retriever, angry golden retriever, depressed golden retriever, sad golden retriever. But they do have heart. And this was a beautiful dog. And you could tell he had been pampered his whole life. He was probably there getting his teeth flossed and his nails done. But he was just sort of, you know, looking around and as he was being groomed. And then suddenly, he saw me. And he locked in on me, these golden retriever love tractor beams. And I speak dog, so we just went into this whole thing. And he just had this, he just communicated the sense of like, I have been waiting my whole life for this moment. Do you have any idea how awesome you are? It's you, my God. I was completely, and I had to tear my eyes away. And it was a good thing I didn't have a handgun because I would have taken the dog with me, probably. this love trance. Now that level of love might be a little bit over the top because, you know, love without wisdom can be a little naive, a little, you know, without bounds. And dog love can be a little naive as well. Maybe you know the cartoon of this dog is sitting in the back of the car in the driveway and talking to the dog next door and says, guess what, Ralph? I'm going to the vet to get tutored. What I'd like to talk about tonight is wise love, the balance of that infinite capacity for compassion and love balanced with wisdom. The tentative title for this talk is Unleashing the Inner Golden Retriever. Last night, Pat said that we had just left the harbor, and now tonight I think I can say we're officially at sea. Not lost at sea, we're just at sea. We're moving into the depth of the retreat now. Tonight, I'd like to look about how you can view your experience as it arises and how you can be with it. This is a transformational practice. And there are four things I'd like to touch on tonight, if I can. The first is a little bit on the practice of cultivating authentic friendliness. The second is on the possibility of feeling pain without suffering. The third is how you can transform the judging mind by calling on this quality of the compassionate witness or the compassionate observer. And to talk a little bit about the power of forgiveness as a way to open ourselves up to this authentic heart. Every Monday night, I drive to my class in Arlington, Virginia. And on Glebe Road, there is one intersection that is sort of worked by a couple people who are there to ask for money and donations. They have signs kind of declaring their, you know, their particular needs and so forth. And when the traffic stops, they have their sign and they walk, kind of walk up and down. I noticed that every time I would come to that stop sign, I would have a sense of dread, and I would do anything I could to avoid making eye contact with these people as they would walk back and forth. Do you ever notice that? When you see someone who's in need or asking for something, how you will do anything you can to not make eye contact. Because if you were to make eye contact, you would have to make contact with that suffering. You would have to see who's there. It's very common, and it's not a bad thing. We can have empathy overload, compassion fatigue. It's just too much to take in. And I've debated for myself. You know, there are those who say, don't give money directly to someone because they're just going to use it to reinforce their addiction or their habit. You should give it to the organizations that support people. And so I've had this opportunity every Monday night to kind of experience this. And I made a conscious decision a while ago to make eye contact and to give something just for my own experience to sort of challenge my own privileged life. In that same way, when you are not willing to make contact with the suffering of others in order to not see it, if you are not willing to look at your own suffering, that is a way of not acknowledging what is actually there. And this is a practice of looking, of identifying what is here, exploring your relationship, the attitude in your mind, how to be with it. I was working one-on-one with someone a while back who just had a huge amount of dissatisfaction in his life. He was really smart. He was talented. He didn't lack for money. And we explored this practice of rain that Tara spoke about the other morning. The first to sort of recognize or realize, well, what's actually happening? What's actually going on? And so he told me a little bit about his story, that he always had this feeling of being separate from others. There was always this sense that it was never enough. There was always something wrong with him. He always felt isolated. He couldn't make real intimate friendships. He'd try to engage. He would try to join groups, but inevitably he'd feel dissatisfied, and then he would get angry and lash out and would lose whatever relationships he had cultivated. And it happened over and over and over again. He began to recognize maybe it isn't out there. Maybe there's something in here. And so we explored the A of that acronym, to accept or allow. And I asked, did it feel okay to kind of dive into this? And he was ready. So we moved into the I, the investigation, the intimacy with kindness, with the experience. And as I asked him to really sense how his body felt, how it held this whole situation, he started to describe this felt sense that Pat was speaking about, a tightness, kind of a burning, kind of a wanting that sort of felt like a black hole, a deep sense of heat, almost like a volcanic feeling inside. And as I asked him to describe what he was feeling, he said, this is anger. And I asked him to sense back into how his body was holding. I said, does the word anger resonate with this feeling? And he paused for a long time and he said, no, actually, this is hurt. I just feel rejected and I feel unwanted. There are two essential questions in mindfulness. What is happening right now? And can you be with it? And there are kind of subsets to those questions that can take you into a subtler quality of investigation. But as he contacted that sense of hurt, and that sense of kind of unquenched wanting, I asked him this question. How does this want you to be with it? A long pause, and he said, it doesn't want to be fixed. I think it just wants to be known. And so we explored that, of just really letting it know that he saw it. I asked him another question, another subset. What does this need in order to feel more whole? And he said, to be held with care. And he explored that, of just holding that with care, with kindness. And he began to feel a shift, a shift in the felt sense. This tight, burning feeling inside began to dissipate, began to widen, it began to soften a little bit. And at one point he said, does everyone feel this? I said, I think so. Everyone, to some degree, everywhere feels this. And he began to open to kind of the shared feeling of hurt and disappointment that we all experience at different times. And that led to sort of the end part of that equation. Sort of, he was less identified with his suffering and more aware of the shared suffering. And with that, he began to sense a greater feeling of ease. This practice of calling on compassion and self-care, to me, is really the real transformational agent. And I'd like to leave just a short reflection, if you would, if you could just close your eyes for just a moment. When you reflect on this acronym, first to simply recognize what is here right now. What is your experience right now? Can you find a word or two that describes the quality of presence right now? Can you be with this? Can you say yes to this moment? Can you sense even more intimately what this moment feels like? Is there a sense of how this moment wants you to be with it right now? And in your own way, if you were to invite a quality of loving presence, whatever that may mean for you, what does that feel like? A quality of kindness or empathy or compassion or gentle curiosity. Just sense what that feels like. And as you're ready, you can deepen the breath and let your eyes open or remain with them closed. As we're progressively moving into the retreat, you may notice that you're having more and more moments of presence, perhaps just more and more moments of actually being here. You're building more concentration. And the more you experience that sense of steadiness, chances are you're beginning to notice more of the texture of everything that's changing, perhaps beginning to recognize more of the habitual patterns. You know, maybe you're on now to the top 10 stories that are just cycling through. Maybe you're aware of sort of the stimulus response, the something occurs and boom, you go right over to planning or fantasy or aversion or worry. All the patterns are getting clearer now, perhaps. Inevitably, we become more and more aware of how we react to the moment. How you might get lost in aversion, in anger, judgment, blame. The movement of the mind toward craving, wanting, planning, fantasy. The mind drifting off into restlessness and worry, the hamster wheel of anxiety. Or the pattern of disengaging, moving into sloth and torpor. Or perhaps the spasms of doubt and self-criticism. These five hindrances become more and more clear the more we relax and pay attention. And as I like to say, with these five obstacles, the five hindrances, the good news is there are only five. The bad news is they are really sneaky and really persistent. So there are moments, perhaps, of equanimity, just moments of peace. And perhaps at times you're lost, lost in thought, lost in a reaction. And this is what we're here for, to really notice what's between us and feeling free, to bring it attention, to identify it, to explore what it means to draw on this quality of kindness and compassion and observe its effect. There's a men's group in DC called M3, Men Meeting for Meditation. They have a kind of a traditional sharing where they'll go around the circle and they'll share about their AFGO. A-F-G-O. For those not familiar, I'll give you the alternative description. It's another freaking growth opportunity. And the more you sit, the more you relax, the more you pay attention, the more you feel, the more you can sense the stickiness and the pain, inevitably, that arises. And the question becomes, is it possible to feel pain without suffering? We're certainly aware of the suffering piece. I was reflecting on this question. It reminded me of a time back in college. A number of friends and I jumped into a Volkswagen van and drove from Wisconsin down to southeastern Utah to do some climbing. We're going to do 11 days in the canyonlands, going down one very, very steep canyon. We're about 4 days into our hike, and we were so deep in, we could only see the sun for about 4 hours. Really, really steep. 4 hours a day, we only had sunlight. So three of us were feeling a little bit, a little excess energy. So we thought, well, let's climb to the rim. These are all sandstone, and it was sort of friction climbing. So we didn't have ropes, but I've always loved rock climbing. What I lack in strength, I make up for in wingspan. So there were three of us going up a pretty steep sandstone cliff. And we're going up a seam. I was the third person. And as we were kind of climbing along, suddenly I kind of felt something by my foot, and the sound went, and I stopped, and I said, called up to my friends who were sort of straight up there, I said, there's a rattler here by my foot. And they stopped, and I said, let me just pause. I could feel the snake right by him. I was just wearing very light, you know, friction climbing shoes. And I waited for maybe 10 minutes. Now, this reminded me later of a very powerful teaching in mindfulness. That is to neither indulge nor deny. I was not in a position where I could indulge into my emotions about that experience. But neither was I in a position to deny that there was a rattler right against my foot. So I waited for about 10 minutes, and then I thought, okay, now's the time, and I just kind of twitched my toes. Started rattling right away. That upped the ante a little bit. And I just continued to wait. And I actually, you know, I think when you are in a situation like that, sort of a natural kind of calm comes over. And so I waited for a longer period of time. And long story short is my friend came around another seam, took me by the hand, and I kind of swung away from the cliff and kind of avoided that. But there's a beautiful teaching in this practice about the second arrow. That when you experience pain, it feels like an arrow. It feels like you're struck by an arrow. When you react mentally, it's as if you're being stung again and again and again. In that situation, it was very clear that I didn't have a lot of room to react. There was not a lot of room for me to complain or want it different. I could neither deny or indulge in my experience. This is what the Buddha said. When touched with a feeling of pain, the ordinary, uninstructed person sorrows, grieves, and laments, beats his breast, becomes distraught. So he feels two pains, physical and mental, just as if they were to shoot a man with an arrow and right afterward were to shoot him with another one. So he would feel the pains of two arrows. But in the case of a well-taught disciple, when she is touched by a painful feeling, she will not worry or grieve and lament. She will not beat her breast and weep, nor will she be distraught. It is one kind of feeling she experiences, a bodily one, but not a mental feeling. Ruth talked the other day about papancha, about the proliferation of thoughts. You have one thought and it sets off 20 thoughts. Our practice is to come back to the direct experience. So many times when we experience discomfort or unpleasant or displeasure, we move right into a reactive phase. Why is this happening to me? This is so unfair. The invitation is to come back to the question, what is my experience right now? Can I be with this? How does this want me to be with it right now? Can I hold this in loving presence? Very easy to say this. Not so easy to practice. But you may be familiar with the equation that's oftentimes used, that P times R equals S. Pain times resistance equals suffering. You can experience just a little bit of pain, have a huge amount of resistance, you will suffer to the degree you resist. And it's possible to have a lot of pain with very little resistance and have little suffering. You will experience that physical pain, but you won't necessarily be adding to it. So there's something here as we relax and pay attention about looking at how we observe and experience what arises. Inevitably, we experience the judging mind. In the ashram where I lived for a number of years, the founder of the ashram, who was quite a renowned yogi, was returning back to India at the end of his life to die. And he was asked by one of the senior disciples, what's the highest quality of a spiritual seeker? I was pretty sure he was going to say something like, whatever you're enjoying, stop it. Or work harder. But what he said was, the highest quality of a spiritual seeker is self-observation without judgment. And when you try that one on, of what it means to observe the self without judgment, something very interesting opens up. I was reading the story of a writer who is an actual judge and practices meditation. And this is what he said before he would go in to hear a case, to kind of cultivate the sense of non-judging mind as a judge. He said, "Before I enter the courtroom, I do a short exercise of breathing in and breathing out in long, mindful breaths. I then remind myself of the situation that is about to take place and who the participants are. Before beginning any exchange with the people in crisis, I try to let go of distracting thoughts and emotions as best as I can with an approach similar to what the poet Mary Oliver employs before she begins writing a poem. Insofar as one can, I put aside ego and vanity. I listen. Unlike the poet, I am not listening for an inner muse, but rather I am disposing myself to be open to the statements of the litigants, their witnesses, and their attorneys." And he goes on to talk about how he actively cultivates this sense of non-judgment so he can be open to the truth, putting aside ego and vanity. And I thought it might be interesting for us to try this as a short reflection. If you like, you can close your eyes. And you might bring your attention to the anchor that you are primarily using, or the one that calls your attention right now. And you might explore what this quality feels like. What does non-judging feel like? Father Thomas Keating describes the practice as the practice of consent, a practice of allowing or saying yes. And over the next minute or two, as you practice, you might notice the mind judging. And when you notice it, just sense if you can bring yourself back to the direct moment-to-moment experience. You might gently deepen the breath. And let the eyes open if you like. Mindfulness has been described as moment-to-moment, non-judging presence. And just as when we sit with an intention to be present, we become more aware of how we're not present. When we sit with the intention to practice compassion, it automatically means you're going to see all the ways you're not compassionate. That when we practice non-judging awareness, of course, it will heighten your awareness of all the ways that you judge. Have you ever looked in the mirror and be critical of what you've seen in the mirror? We're programmed to judge. And many of us are bound by this ruthless critic. And oftentimes on retreat, that sort of vicious critic becomes quite predominant in our experience. At least many have reported that. So judging and comparing is what we do. Most of us are paid good money to judge and compare. As Ram Dass said, the mind is a wonderful servant and a lousy master. And of course, there are two sides to every coin. One side of this judging mind is called wise discernment. It's your capacity to compare one thing to another and honestly evaluate the difference. The other side is this unrelenting, nagging, and sometimes vicious voice. And then the question becomes, what do you do with this judging, ruthless critic? And I believe it has something to do about recognizing the mind when it's judging and exploring forgiveness, exploring compassion as possible antidote. So again, the more you slow down, the more you feel, the more you notice, the more you recognize the habitual patterns of your mind, the more you recognize how you're holding your experience. And the more inevitably you begin to recognize what's between you and feeling free, and what's between you and feeling happy. On a retreat some time back in one of the small groups, there was a woman who just reported the unrelenting guilt and criticism that she felt toward herself as a mother. She had been in an abusive relationship, just a really toxic relationship. And she left. And she left some children behind. And as she described her situation, she knew that if she didn't leave, she would have died. She knew that. But at the same time, she could not feel any relief from the guilt that she felt about abandoning her children. She was a very wise, intelligent woman, and she had spent much of her life working to make amends with her kids. She spent a tremendous amount of time with them, willing to be with them, and yet her kids had been wounded, and they told her on a regular basis. She felt utterly caught, just locked in and tormented by this capacity, by basically her inability to let go of this guilt. And we explored about how she might explore forgiveness as a way of working with that judging mind. And as I've been in touch with her over the years, as she really took on the forgiveness practice, it wasn't immediate for her. She'd been wrestling with this with her whole life. But the intention to forgive was powerful for her. At one point I had asked her, if you could forgive yourself, what would that feel like? And in the beginning, for just moments, she could imagine what that might feel like to be forgiven. So we explored forgiveness in our afternoon session. I'd like to offer another reflection on forgiveness of self. So if you like, you might again close your eyes. And you might reflect on some way that you have found yourself caught in judgment of self or judgment of other. Just take a few moments to kind of reflect on your experience, kind of go through the files. And when you have in mind something you might like to investigate, you might take a moment to just to recognize it. Ah, this is it. You might explore this quality of allowing or accepting. Does it feel okay to be with this? And I'd like to offer kind of an informal forgiveness prayer that the teacher Eric Kolvig has offered. It's kind of contemporary words. And I'll offer these twice, and you might just reflect on the quality of feeling inside. Extending forgiveness to yourself. I allow myself to be imperfect. I allow myself to make mistakes. I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself. If I cannot forgive myself now, may I forgive myself sometime in the future. And you might reflect on forgiveness from another for any harm you may have done them. Please allow me to be imperfect. Please allow me to make mistakes. Please allow me to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. Please forgive me. If you cannot forgive me now, please try to forgive me sometime in the future. I allow myself to be imperfect. I allow myself to make mistakes. I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself. If I cannot forgive myself now, may I forgive myself sometime in the future. And you might inquire in these final moments, if you could forgive yourself, what would that feel like inside? What would that be like? If you were forgiven, what would that feel like? What would that be like inside? And in your own time, deepening the breath, and if you like, you can let the eyes open. Or feel free to remain with them closed. Whenever you ask yourself the question, what is happening right now? That inquiry leads to wisdom. the recognition of what is actually happening. And whenever you ask yourself the question, can I be with this? Can I let this be? And that leads to the flowering of compassion, the capacity to hold it, the capacity to let it go. And this is a practice. It's a moment-to-moment meeting of your experience through the eyes of wisdom and through the eyes of love and tenderness and compassion and kindness. Inevitably, we call on this refuge of Sangha, the refuge of love. Of course, it's easy to play games with compassion. I've certainly found myself wrestling with some issue and coming up with compassion as a strategy. Maybe you've done this. I'll just love this and it'll go away and never, ever come back to bother me again. It's not very effective. We can sort of rush to compassion that sort of leads to premature transcendence or spiritual bypassing. It's the willingness to turn to where it truly hurts. When we can honestly name what our experience is. Just as when we see a beggar in the street and try to avoid eye contact, when we make eye contact, we make contact with that suffering. It takes tremendous courage to name the ouch, to name the suffering in any given moment. Perhaps one of the greatest ways of being with this suffering is to remember that other people feel this too. Certainly at times in my hardest times of suffering, I notice how I tighten, how I get small, contracted. And when I can remember other people feel this too, something expands, something opens. And you might find this to be helpful on retreat. Inevitably, over these days, you may have just seen someone out of the corner of your eye who looked like they were suffering or in pain. You may have seen others who seemed like they were in a vibrant point of aliveness. We're all taking turns in these experiences. There are definitely times as we move deeper in retreat where you might call upon this collective, the collective intention we're holding, to wake up. It's an enormous, very rare power at your disposal. So this is the path. Calling on wisdom to recognize what is here, to see it clearly, and calling on compassion to sense how it is all interconnected, to sense how you can be with and hold it. In The Matrix, Morpheus said to Neo, before he jumped from one building to another, he said, free your mind. And I think the avenue to freeing your mind runs through the heart. Let's close with a short meditation, and I'd like to offer a little reading. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you can know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." And then goes off with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. And what you most seek is inside you, and also inside me. You know the sprout is hidden inside the seed. We are all struggling. None of us has gone far. Let your arrogance go and look around inside. the blue sky opens out farther and farther. The daily sense of failure falls away. The damage I have done to myself fades. There is so much life, so much light, when I sit firmly in that world. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.